Well, welcome everyone. So we have a pretty packed morning talking about different issues related to comparative effectiveness research. And so Dr. Landis, who's a colleague of mine at Towers Watson, asked me to, I work with him on the presentation, so he can't be here. So I'm filling in for him and moderating. So I'm going to go through an overview of the role of health IT, and then we have a couple panels, discussions. So what I'd like to do is to have people go in and start their presentations, and then we can hold off questions towards the end. Hopefully we'll have time. It's a small enough room. If you have questions, hopefully we can make this interactive. I want to gauge from the audience how many people are very familiar with comparative effectiveness in terms of what it is, and if you can define it, elevator pitch, you know, someone asked you at a cocktail party, you know. Oh, pretty good, okay. So any of you work for a health department or a public health field? Okay, all right. What about for a hospital or a physician group or on the provider side? Community health plan? Okay. All right. So I'm going to dive right into it. Okay. So in terms of the research funding that was available for CER prior to the Affordable Care Act in ARRA, which was the stimulus, $1.1 billion, of which $300 million was for HRQ, $400 for NIH, and $400 for Secretary of HHS, which is really for ASPE, Assistant Secretary of Planning and Evaluation. And so there was a federal coordinating council that created a blueprint, if you will, for comparative effectiveness research, and then the Institute of Medicine was called in to define the priorities. So that kind of started the dialogue to this process. So as far as attributes of comparative effectiveness research, this is basically taken from some of the work that the Coordinating Council has done. So applies to all types of technologies, interventions, effectiveness in realistic settings, which is really important from a patient-centered perspective, and I'll define patient-centered, emphasizing healthcare outcomes, morbidity, mortality, and quality of life, drawing on a variety of complementary methods, and then enabling subgroup analysis for different responses to patient groups and priority populations. So I wanted to hold up sort of an exhibit. So if you read Politico, which is, I guess, the one of the papers of Daily Record here in Washington, it has an article in here talking about how HHS issued guidelines with related to disparities. It's a pretty good article and sort of defines kind of what they've done. So the reason I bring this up is that these issues are at the front and center of discussions here in town in terms of how not only is the priority setting going to happen, but the types of projects. And so it's. I thought that was interesting. I read that this morning. So priority populations is defined by National Institute of Health is racial and ethnic minorities, people with disabilities, children, people with multiple chronic conditions, and the elderly. And then this definition is actually from the Institute of Medicine had put together a report a couple years ago looking at disparities. And as you probably are well aware from this conference, there's been a number of sessions on health equity and reduction of health disparities. So significant gaps and differences exist in terms of not only morbidity, but prevalence of disease across a variety of populations, especially racial and ethnic minorities. So these issues are central to comparative effectiveness research. So this is a definition that I found from Dr. Borwick, the experience, who's the CMS administrator, the experience or to the extent that an individual patient recognition, respect, dignity, and choice, which I think is a really interesting definition. So I'm going to talk about what is patient-centered outcomes research. It helps people to make informed healthcare decisions, allows their voice to be heard in terms of assessing value of healthcare options, and then it goes through a series of questions which I won't read, but okay. These slides are from PCORI, which is the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, and I know it's a busy slide, and I could probably spend quite a few minutes describing it, which I, since I, for lack of time, I'm not going to go into the framework. But what I think from a health IT perspective, it's important if you sort of, well, I don't know, if I don't have my pointer, but if you look at the blue boxes, you see that the impact of new technology and health information to improve patient experience and care coordination is central to not only the existing areas, but also the criteria that PCORI is using. Now, PCORI was funded, it was a provision in the Affordable Care Act to really make patient-centered outcomes central to comparative effectiveness research. And so, as we all know, there are current gaps in knowledge and variation of care. I talked about health disparities. And then exists great potential to improve decision-making on the part of care providers, physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, other sorts of care providers in terms of decision-making. So if you have questions, we can talk about it, but I'll move on. All right, you've seen it. Go to the next one. So who are the key stakeholders in terms of this new Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute? Certainly patients, different advocacy groups, caregivers, and then professional organizations, which include employers, large health systems, federal, state, local government, and certainly industry. Now, PCORI is in the process of evaluating a number of pilot projects, which is being discussed right now. So I just picked a few areas of interest within PCORI. And I want to emphasize the ones that are in sort of in bold is decision support tools, which is really central to the use, sort of advanced use of health IT. So you can have an electronic medical record, but it's really important that you have a set of tools that build on an existing EMR system that truly help physicians practice better medicine. And translating evidence-based care into healthcare practice and accounting for individual patient preferences. The second area is in the area of predictive tools, instruments that can measure or predict outcomes of interest to patients, and then standards of measurement. And the last area, which I think is really important for this audience at APHA, is the patient care interaction and options for prevention wellness, which is central to not only diagnosis of care, but hopefully preventing chronic conditions. So I talked about PCORI, but I also want to couch my address looking at some of the limitations that PCORI has. Under the statute, PCORI is limited, so it does not include mandates for coverage or payment, and you can't use certain cost-effectiveness threshold. I know this is getting into the weeds, but it's important to understand that comparative effectiveness is the way that it is being discussed. Again, of course, this is I wouldn't say flux, but certainly it's not been all laid out. It's important to look at gathering research for effective interventions, and as far as the mandate, does not include for insurance coverage or payment. So I talked about sort of giving a general overview. I think if you were to look at what a strategy could be, I think it's important to have new clinical registries and linked databases, not only to capture existing clinical data, but looking at clinical data across the sphere. As you well know, that our delivery system is quite fragmented, and so it's really important that you have systems of not only collecting information, but having that information being relevant, useful, and timely for the people who have to make clinical care choices. And so these registries would fill gaps in terms of evidence, collecting data from physicians and hospitals. And then the last part is, right now, there is a lot of potential to abstract data from large EMR systems that exist for multi-specialty clinics, hospitals, physician groups in general. So building on that, once those systems get deployed, what the future may hold. There's been a lot of emphasis in comparative effectiveness on randomized controlled trials, and I think I wanted to make the point that observational studies are you know, just as important. So population-based longitudinal cohort studies, which some of you with a public health background will be familiar with, and I mentioned patient registries, and then claims databases, that which I'm not going to preclude the next presentation, but we'll hear more about claims databases. So thinking about how comparative effectiveness research could be utilized, I put that in bold, that it needs to be integrated as decision support in real time and in place of decision making, wherever that happens, whether it's in a clinic, in a community-based setting, in a hospital setting, depending on level of acuity. And you really would have to have decision support systems far more advanced than what we have today to incorporate the useful lessons from comparative effectiveness back to making better. Ultimately, all of this really should be in the context of better patient care and patient education, so that patients are better informed in terms of the choices that they have when dealing with the medical care system. And for populations, for racial and ethnic minorities, older people, it is a significant challenge to deal with the delivery system at every single point. For the physicians in the audience, I think it's important that CER is used for continuing medical education. You need to have cooperation across medical specialties, and there really needs to be coordination with the variety of medical specialty societies and training. And there is a session later on today on academic detailing, which is, the definition is, I guess, to have evidence-based information about therapeutic choices that is independent, independent of sponsorship. And this is an idea that is gaining traction in a number of places.